Ibra di testa, Tonali, gol! Sandro Maritato! Sandro!
Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of the Sempre Milan podcast. I'm your host, Ollie Fisher, back after a week absence, joined by Anthony Torgrude, who is a little bit worse for wear today.
Yeah, what's up guys? Glad to be back. Under the weather today, so apologies if I go off camera to sneeze or blow my nose or whatever. I'm here though, and I'm going to soldier through it. And we also got Lorenzo with us.
Yeah, hey guys. As always, happy to be back. A couple victories to discuss. It's nice, and we'll be helping Torgrude out today, so it'll be good.
Yeah, good on him for soldiering through, much like the team have through the difficult period and all that. But yeah, good to be back and good to be able to recap some positive results. I took a little bit of heat on the episode last week for missing it. The schedules just didn't quite line up. And I was thinking about putting Maddie on blast for the opening part of the pod, but I'm not going to do that because I'm the bigger man vertically and in every other way. So yeah, we've got
not
a couple
horizontally.
Of... Hey, he's still got it. He might be ill, but he's still on form. So yeah, boys, we've got a couple more wins to recap, and it seems that, you know, one goal is all it takes at the moment. And we've got a game against Atalanta to preview, but it does feel like, before we head into the game specifically, it does feel like we're all a bit chirpier. That maybe we're seeing the light at the end of the tunnel, or when we're in that light already, I don't know. But we had a very bleak sort of start to 2023 when you look back on it. You know, it was only when we won that game against Torino, which was obviously recapped last week, that I realised 7 games and essentially a month without a win is a hell of a long time. It is a long, long time, you know, especially when the goals were flying in and everything. But we got that win against Torino. There was some worries that might be a bit of a false dawn because the performance wasn't particularly convincing and it just took one moment of quality to win the game. And then we headed into the game against Spurs. First leg, last 16, Champions League tie at San Siro. So we hosted Antonio Conte's Spurs, and also must mention at this point that Conte stayed in Milan after the game because he isn't feeling great after he had his gallbladder removed, and Spurs' assistant has now taken over for the time being. So best wishes to Conte, rivalries aside and everything. But yeah, Spurs came to the San Siro, 75,000 fans. It was a raucous atmosphere. As the teams were coming out, there was a display from, presumably, Curva have organised it, that covered basically every single seat. It was a message to the team on our biggest European night in almost a decade, that the fans were all with them. And we hope that we could take another step forward out of what has been a difficult moment. And I think it would be fair to say that we rose to the occasion. Spurs have not been in brilliant form so far in 2023. And in general, they've seen their top four push. They've been inconsistent, you know, in trying to reach that objective. And certain players have been out of form that they needed to be in form, like Hyun-Min Son. But I don't think any of us expected a clean sheet. Would that be fair to say?
No, I expected much worse. I think I said 2-2 in the preview, and I'm, you know, pleasantly surprised to be wrong there. You mentioned biggest game in a decade, and yeah, this was our first knockout game in over a decade, like just a couple days more than 10 years exactly, which is bewildering. And you know, if there's a lot of fans out there, this was the first time I've ever seen us win a knockout game, which is insane to think of, 7-time European champions, and here we are with our, you know, all the new fans, the kids born in the 2000s. They're just like, wow, we finally saw a knockout victory. You know, we finally saw a knockout game. So a lot of emotion there for fans everywhere, and it was a fantastic game. I was nervous. I'd say on the edge of my seat, but I'd be lying. I was standing up the entire time. I could not sit down in my living room. I was pacing back and forth doing this thing, you know, like I was just nervous as could be. It was Valentine's Day as well. And my girlfriend came home with like maybe 10 minutes left in the game. And she did not get a greeting when she came home on Valentine's Day because I was glued to the TV. And so, yeah, she sat patiently and waited behind me. For the
you know which love came first, though, mate, eh?
That's exactly.
Not another place.
But yeah, honestly, I don't even remember anything from the game. I was so focused in on it that now that it's over, it's just like everything just comes out of your body and you're like, okay, it's done. I don't even remember who scored our goal.
Brahim Diaz, and maybe that, that might be the...
Oh, it was a fine header. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
A diving header from Brahim Diaz. Yeah. I don't think there was a betting market available for that, but I think that would have been very, very good odds. Yeah, I mean, look, the great European nights that Milan have had, the important thing has been setting the tone. And to score within 6 minutes, Lorenzo was just like, it was the perfect start because it got the crowd right on Spurs' back. And it made it very hard for them to get back in the game.
Yeah, I mean, it was a real nice surprise for us to actually start on the front foot, right? You know, we were really giving it all. I know it sounds so silly to say, but it actually looked like players like Leao gave a shit. You know, he actually really wanted to play, which is good on one end because obviously we want that from the player. But also, I mean, not to put a negative spin on it, it does seem like he does switch off in league games a bit because maybe he doesn't feel like they're important, blah, blah, blah. But obviously, this in all that context away, it was important. He did care. And it was just really, really good to see us straight away. I mean, from literally, as we were discussing before the pod at the start, that pass from Chow for the goal was just sensational. It was absolutely, I mean, it wasn't a centre-back pass. I mean, we're talking about mark distribution. And as you were saying, Ollie, it was like that level, but from the centre-back, from a player who's, what, is that his first Champions League start, right?
It was his debut in Champions League.
Yeah, his debut league won. How many starts did he have this season in general?
Four, if you count the Champions League.
Yeah, I mean, that to produce the composure and that level of pass to Teo Hernandez. I mean, what a save by Fraser Forster, by the way. Talk about back up.
Yeah, it was.
Initial save. Unreal.
It was. Yeah. It was the two. I mean, two.
It was a double like, steal, wasn't it?
Yeah. I don't think I don't think Teo should have been shooting from there, in fairness. I think there was probably a cutback on, but I think he was just playing for the ball, being parried into a dangerous area, and that's what happened. But yeah, that first save was amazing. Stuck a strong hand up, and a lot of Spurs really fans have been slagging Foster off going into that game, saying that he's going to be rubbish and whatnot. But he did a good job there. And yeah, Chiao's distribution was incredible. People forget he was left out of the squad list for the first part, you know, for the group stages of the Champions League. He didn't even get a chance to make his debut. And now here we are where it almost feels like we can't do without him.
Yeah.
And obviously the last game comes into that as well because we're now three clean sheets in a row. But I guess what I will say is, I can see why Spurs are having the problems that they're having because we know that they've got class attacking talent on the day. You know, Harry Kane is one of the best number nines and could possibly be one of the best number tens in the world with his distribution. Kulusevski he's sort of had a new lease of life since he went there. Heung-min Son has not been great this season, to be fair, but I still thought that he'd have the characteristics to hurt a team like ours. But our three centre-backs on their three forwards seem to do pretty much everything right. You know, Kier took Kane down on a couple of occasions early on just to let him know that he was there and that he wasn't going to have an easy night. But I think in the second half in particular, when the game was a bit tricky for us to play because we had a lead to defend, but you want to try and pad it out if possible ahead of the return leg. I think we played it superbly. I don't think any of the back three... you know, I don't have anything bad to say about them.
No, I think the only time I think it was Kerr. This isn't a slight on him because, as we were just discussing, Kane is legitimately a world class player, one of the best strikers. He almost scored out of nothing. I think that was spinning Kerr in the second half. It was a bit the shot that hit the underside of the bar, but again, that's no slight on the Dane because Kane can do that. So I would. The defenders were exceptional, absolutely exceptional. I mean, Kane had nothing to do really. He had that shot was a pop shot, you know, from a half turn. That was it.
So, yeah,
I think that was the one where he was offside as well in the build up. Son,
yeah, he might have even been. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
I think Kier did a great job of shutting down Kane. And I was scared at halftime that he was going to get carded, potentially even get sent off. And I was saying, like, we need to make this up because every time Kane got the ball, Kier just went straight through his back and just put him down, which I understand the reasoning behind it. I'm not even mad about that. I was shocked he didn't get a card. There was like three or four opportunities where he got the foul called on him, but he didn't get carded. And I was like, how many times can you get called for the exact same thing in a row before you get a card? And it's one going into halftime, he was at four. So I was like, it's got to be the next one. But he didn't get carded, so.
No, and that's great. It was one of those as well where the fouls were happening so far up the pitch that they were thwarting the attacks before they could really spin and get into space. But at the same time, if those fouls are happening 30 yards further back and in our half, he's definitely getting carded on potentially the first or second one. So maybe it's smart play to cut it out that far up and know that the ref don't have the bottle to pull a card out.
Yeah, I mean, that could have been it. That could have been the strategy. I mean, knowing that, look, everyone in the Spurs front line is quicker than Kerr, every single one of them. And that's not even an insult. They're just really fast. So knowing that as soon as they get the ball, just take him out, sit him on his ass, can't do anything about it, you know? So that seemed to be the strategy, and it obviously worked. It seemed like they had a similar idea, and they weren't as executing it as well with Christian Romero, who should have been sent off. I think that was
kind of a unanimous
feeling amongst both fan bases, but obviously wasn't something that was going to be called. So it didn't get called. It should have been reviewed. It wasn't, but it was clear studs up into was it Tonali's shin?
I hadn't even spotted that at first, and I was watching the game with the missus, and she said she plays football, so she understands all about impact injuries and stuff, but she said rightly so that the only thing that stops that being a really nasty injury for Tonali is the fact that his foot wasn't planted. If his foot was planted, it's potentially a leg break. And Romero gets away with it because the contact almost glances off rather than goes straight in. And I honestly don't understand how it hasn't been given as a red card. It's reckless play. He lost. He actually left the ground at one point, which is meant to be a red card in itself. Studs were showing. I think it was a really, really poor oversight by the VAR because the refs can see it in real time and judge force. He judged it to be a yellow card. So he's obviously seen some part of the offence. But the VAR then has to step in and say it was reckless. He endangered an opponent. It could have been a serious injury. And Romero's got form for this, you know. He sometimes just completely loses his mind and makes these daft tackles. And that's why I think a lot of people don't respect him as a player.
I think he's actually on the flip side of that.
Good.
I was going to say, actually, kind of glad he didn't get a red card because I am almost convinced he might in the return leg. He's a weak for Spurs in the sense that he's actually a very good defender, but he lets his hot-headedness too much, like overtake his judgment far too much. He is the sort of player that I could genuinely see if we are, I don't know, stressed in a situation, either losing, winning, or goal, he's the sort of player that could force a mistake. So I'm kind of glad that he wasn't because I feel like he'll do it again at Spurs. I'm not saying he's a player that would, you know, mess it up for them because he's bad mentally from an aggression point of view.
He's
always been like that too. He was like that at Everton. He was a wild boy.
Yeah, he earned that reputation when he went on loan at first from to Genoa. And since then he's sort of been, you know, regarded as a hothead. Spurs had lost their game coming into the one against Milan, 4-1 against Leicester, which was a pretty bad result, and I think it exposed their back three a little bit and their absence of midfielders. Eric Dier in particular had a dreadful game against Leicester, having watched it back. But I think that We only really took advantage of that late on. But one thing I will say is that you could tell both teams were trying to bypass the midfield because obviously we had Tonali and Krunic, which it's a better pairing on paper than Skip and Saar, who were making their first Champions League starts for Spurs. But it's still not necessarily the kind of pairing that can dictate the tempo of the game against level or weaker opponents like Bennacer and Tonali can. They did an all right job, but I did just find it funny that both teams went as direct as what they did.
I thought Saar actually did really well. The one thing I would say that kind of hurt him was instead of, you know, making that final pass, as soon as he was maybe 30 yards out, he just shot the ball every single time. And one time he got pretty close, and I think that's what gave him the confidence to keep doing it. But, you know, it was ultimately that's a coin flip. That's putting it in the wind and just hoping for the best, and it's just not going to happen. So especially with the form Tata's been in lately, he's been fantastic. This game, the Monza game, he's been in really good form lately, so props to him. But it's interesting that they lost 4-1 to Leicester before this game, because Leicester was in 17th and they were in fifth.
Yeah.
And we were in fifth and then lost to 17th place Sassuolo 5-1 or 5-2. So
three goal same, margin. Yeah.
Same margin. Really interesting how the tides turn like that.
Yeah. Another thing that I want to mention as a point of praise is that Spurs actually still have, I believe now, because they've just beaten West Ham 2-0 and scored set piece, but they've got the most set piece goals of any Premier League side. And set pieces have been our weakness. There's no two ways about it.
In Europe, not just the Prem.
Yeah, that's probably correct. Yeah. And obviously we conceded, for example, the near post header to 5'9" Domenico Berardi, the header to 5'10" Lautaro Martinez. And, you know, set pieces rightly were judged to be our weak point. I've said on the podcast before that for some stupid reason, we're sticking with a mix between zonal and man marking. It was clear that we used a different approach against Spurs. I think sometimes you have to react to the threat that's in front of you. And we had man on man at pretty much all times, especially for those free kicks that were in the first half that were sort of just left of centre. They had two or three of those. And then from corners, we did a really good job of clearing the initial ball as well. So that was a real positive step forward, because any punter would have been looking at that saying Spurs are definitely going to score a set piece, at least one.
Yeah, and I've noticed in specifically the Spurs game, but also in the game prior and the game after, Malik Chow has cleared every single set piece. I mean, he's tall, that, yeah. He jumps high, he's accurate, and he is the aerial presence we've lacked for years now. I mean, he's been hitting everything out, and it's giving Tata the courage to come out of his box a bit more and punch balls away. We're seeing him actually come off his line. We're also seeing guys like Rebic and Liao staying on the near post on corners, I've noticed, and they've cleared out a few as well. So that's been a nice addition that for whatever reason we haven't done, especially when we've been beaten on the near post so many times. You would think that would be a spot we would have been covering, you know, months ago, but I guess better late than ever.
Yeah, and it's funny, as you mentioned there about mutual confidence. We've been talking about Tata Reshanu giving the back line no confidence, but maybe it was working the other way as well, whereas where Tata didn't really know what to do, because set pieces, we've seen him properly rooted to his line, but it can almost be like if you've got a commandeer in the box like Chow, who is going to provide you with aerial cover, it allows him to do the rest. And also when you've got someone so big in the air like Chow, he essentially does the work of two, you know, and that frees up a man to go and guard the near post, because there were a couple of corners where Spurs had clearly worked on a routine and they grouped about four or five players on the near post, clearly looking for a glancing header or something to cause us a problem. They never got any luck with it. So that's a positive sign. And I hope that continues, because we were all getting really pissed off about the set piece goals, as we have been for about, 8 years now or something.
Yeah. You know, we're also seeing Tata organize the back line and give orders, give commands, which was something that he was receiving from the defenders for a while, which was odd. You know, it never should be that way. And yeah, he's been setting up great. I mean, my opinion on him has taken a total 180. Like, he's just done so well in the last three games. I hope he could keep it up, but well, hopefully Mike's back anyways.
Yeah,
but
that's the thing. He's hit his best.
That's always the way, though, isn't it? You know.
Yeah.
I feel like this the case last season as well.
Yeah, he actually did.
A decent little run, and then Mike came back and struggled a little bit, because I think he might have been rushed back, or he rushed himself back. But yeah, funny how that works. Final thing from the game, and this is either a positive or a negative, depending how you look at it. It really could have been 3-0. You know, we missed those two late chances.
Again, that was a Chow header.
It was. CDK first, obviously, he tries to head back across goal, and he's actually lucky to get a deflection off the Spurs player and get a corner. But that's a sign of a player that's snatching at chances, because he went too early at it, and that's why it was back across. And then the Chiao one. He really should bury it from there. The only I guess, small excuse that I will give him is that I really think he doesn't presume it's going to get there. You know, he has to react to it so late from behind the other person's head that he just has to get a connection on it somehow, but he lands it wide. But maybe it's a good sign that we could have been 3-0 up.
Yeah, I think it's a good sign. Yeah. Hopefully we don't regret missing those chances in the return. I mean, there's still a good chance that happens. Like, we're going to enemy territory. They need to score a goal. They're going to push harder than us. So, yeah, it's definitely not – the tie's not over yet. You know, there's still plenty of room for Spurs to come back and punish us. So, I'm nervous still.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Strange as well, absolutely, having, like, 3 weeks between the two games. Yeah. Kind of just want to get straight back into it this week and pick up where we left off. But that does mean that both teams could have their form go either way between now and then.
One thing on our side, though, is they won't get any of their injured players back, and we should have a full squad by then. Fingers crossed.
They'll have Højbjerg starting, though.
He was just on suspension.
He's a big midfielder, but I don't think he... Yeah, if they had him and Bentancur, then I'd be worried. But just him on his own, I think it'd be fine. Not on his own, but, you know, with a Sarr and Skip, won't be an issue.
And having Lloris out still is a big one. Back line still big, so... Hopefully Son and Kane are just silent again.
Yeah, yeah. And I think it was a good indication of how these three-man defence things can work out matchup-wise. I said before that we've had problems against three-man defences and, you know, like Inter should have in theory railed us again but didn't. And it feels like the neutraliser, you know. It feels like the only thing that you can do against teams that are expert playing three-man defence is match them up and don't get overrun down the middle. And we did a very good job of doing that, probably thanks to their midfield absences as well. But tops and flops. I can't give top to the goal scorer, Brahim Diaz, as much as he stole the headlines and was the hero of the night. I'm going to give it to Teo Hernandez, I think, which is partly to be different because I presume you two are going to go for something else. But it was a big step forward for him. I think he struggled with his post-World Cup fatigue. But he clearly had some instructions from Pioli. For example, for our goal, Liao was actually back in his position and Teo had gone bombing upfield to win the header that then resulted to the goal. So followed instructions well and was pretty damn competent on both ends of the ball and saw him being a vocal leader as well. Just proves that he is up to the big nights, you know. So I'll give it to Teo.
I'm going to do one that... is not the one that we are expecting, the one that we actually discussed in the podcast. We're going to go with someone who hasn't been discussed. So I'm going to go with Liao. He was the UEFA man of the match. And, you know, you watch the highlights. He was fantastic. He obviously didn't have a goal. He didn't have an assist, but he was involved in build-up. And you see the way Spurs triple, double covered him every single time. You could go back and watch the highlights. I mean, he took on three players at once multiple times and beat them every single time, got the cross off. Obviously no end product, but that's not necessarily his fault. If he's putting in the crosses and it's connecting to our players, it's not on him for them to finish that. But I thought he was fantastic. The threat of Leo, obviously drawing three players, made more room in the center of the field for attackers to get forward. And I thought he was fantastic. So I'm going with Leo.
Yeah, great choice. That's who I also was going to go for. I'll choose someone else, the other person that I think is the obvious choice. But I also agree. I think Leo was... was sensational. It was so good to see him care and actually perform and pull it off. It was just like, wow, okay, I forgot this guy even. Do you know what I mean? Play for the club. It had been a bit of a shell of himself recently. Yeah, it was lovely. But before I go on to the player, I just want to say that I think the two words, effort and concentration, it was so nice to see both of those things. And I would be a bit more worried if we're not going to speak about Monza, where I saw that again. You know, I didn't want it to be a one-off because it was the Champions League, but it was so nice to see effort and concentration because I ultimately think that's what won us the game. I think we just worked really hard against Spurs. Anyway, I digress. For me, it would be Malik Chow. I thought he was sensational. A debut in the Champions League at 21 years old after having really bit part minutes and then suddenly Pioli's gone, yeah, actually, no, you're actually all right. Like, let's play him more. And he's gone, yeah, cheers, and has smashed it. So, you know, essentially got an assist. I mean, he didn't, but in all intents and purposes, his ball was the assist maker. So, yeah, fantastic performance. What a player.
Yeah, he was incredible. That makes a change as well, that we're spoilt for choice to pick for man of the match. Normally, we're just left.
Normally, and now I can't talk. Normally, we're spoiled for flops.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, and now here we are to flops. I mean, this is going to be quite a harsh awarding process because I think the entire team did exactly what they were meant to do as a unit, and there was nobody who stood out as being completely completely overawed by the occasion, let's put it that way. But I do have one sort of, I don't know, like a little sour impression in my head, and that was from Krunic, which I think this was harsh, but he made a few silly fouls. Some of them were actually harsh to be called, but when you know that that's the standard and they're calling them, you've just got to be a bit more careful with the way that you're intervening, especially with how good they are at set pieces. And also, there were times in that second half where I'd have liked us to dictate the pace a little bit more. Tonali had a good game, and I just think I think Krunic looked that little level below, but then that kind of flipped for the Monza game. So it's funny how it works, but I'm not saying that he was awful by any means, just, you know, he was there.
Yeah, yeah. I was going to pick Krunic as well, but I'll change it up. And again, this is harsh because he played, I think, 35 minutes, but I'm going to go with Macias. I just don't like him in the wing-back role. I don't think he's good enough defensively. Obviously, scored the goal in the Monza game, but we're talking about the Spurs game. And I thought he was very ineffective in just about everything he did. But it's not like he was bad. It's just, we really had a great game, so it's hard to pick a flop. So since we're being critical, that's what I'm going with.
Well, I'm going to be even more critical because I'm going with the goal scorer, which is like, oh my God, crazy. Any excuse for me with Brahim Diaz. That goal was anticipation, right place, right time. You can't take anything away from him. Other than that, he did nothing all game. He did absolutely nothing all game and was bullied. Why Pioli is playing him against Premier League opposition, I do not know. He simply is not strong enough. He does not have enough time on the ball that he likes, and his decision making is terrible. It's absolutely terrible. I don't think I've seen a player that is able to get in a position through his natural low center of gravity and dribbling and then make the wrong decision as consistently as Brahim Diaz. I don't think I've actually seen a player do that. So for me, even though he scored, and I thank you, Brahim, for scoring, I think his overall performance was really, really poor, if I'm honest. But he did score, yeah. So thank you.
Well, that's how I feel about the Monza game, so I get it.
Yeah. I agree with that. I think he was well. I do think, as you alluded to there, quite a lot of the blame lies with Pioli. Like, he's not giving him good enough matchups, especially when it was kind of obvious that Spurs midfield might sit a bit deeper because they need the protection and there wasn't going to be the space between the lines. In fact, there never usually is against Conte teams. But, he got the goal, so I suppose he gets the headlines. But, yeah. Yeah, I don't know. Right, let's move on. So we were back in action after a few days of hiatus, but we didn't have a long travel for this one. What is it, about 40 minutes up the road to the U-Power Stadium it is now, which is a bit of a strange one. Sponsorship deal, I guess. To face off against a Monza side who hadn't lost yet in 2023 and have been a bit of a thorn in the side of some of the big clubs. They've done double over Juventus, although they're a big club anymore. I don't really know, the mid-table.
If they didn't have the point deduction, they'd be above us.
Yeah.
How many points? One, two. How many?
Three.
Three.
They'd be 3 points above us.
That's pretty funny, actually. But, you know. So, yeah. They do have it, don't they? So, yeah. So, I think we were all potentially expecting this to be a tough one. Not a walkover by any means, because Monza... they've not only come up and adapted to the level, they're kind of thriving in it. They made some good summer signings. Paladino seems to be a good coach who's got them playing the right way in the right situations. And as I say, they were unbeaten all calendar year after we'd had a pretty awful run, and we're just trying to emerge from it by any means. I can't lie, I was unavailable for the first 60 minutes of this match, so I only caught the last half an hour live. But having since watched it back, I do think that there's been a bit of an overreaction to this game. A lot of people criticising the way that we played, saying that we weren't dominant and that we ceded a little bit too much to them. But I actually thought that it was a job pretty well done. Like, even if we were at our absolute best, sort of post-lockdown run last season, whatever you might think the best version of us was, I don't think this was ever going to be an easy game. And to win with another clean sheet, for me, it's like, you know, you travel home and you say, thank you very much, that's a good evening's work. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. Did we miss chances towards the end of the game to perhaps make the margin a little bit bigger? We missed chances before the first goal went in as well, sort of half chances on that front. And we had a little bit of luck with Tata Reshanu as well, that ball striking the post, then hitting him, then hitting the post again and going out. Where are we on the satisfaction meter for this one?
I mean, it's a win, so at the end of the day, 10. But performance-wise, like a 6 out of 10. Yeah. I actually was not happy with this game. In fact, I think I displayed the most negative emotion watching this game than any other game in recent time, which is crazy after January. I think January I was just numb, and this one I was like, don't fucking do this to me again. Especially when CDK missed that chance, everything on my coffee table got tossed, just gone. I was like, fuck this. But just going down the stats, man, like our XG was 2.25. So we should have scored more goals, but we had less possession. We had 4 big chances missed. We only had 4 big chances, and since we missed them all. We committed 18 fouls. We were offside twice, and we only had 3 corners to their 10. So the stats aren't really kind to us. They also had double the passes that we did, completed passes. So that's a bit worrying as well. Like I said, Paladino's a great coach, but we should be able to beat Monza. We scored 4 on them in the reverse. No reason we shouldn't have been able to get more in this game. We had so many opportunities, and it seemed like there was just a lot of selfish playing from the players. The big one that comes to mind was Teo running down one-on-one with the keeper. Liao rooted to the penalty spot, completely unguarded, no one there. All he had to do was square the ball, and instead he tried to do like a chip over the goalkeeper, and it got saved. And I mean, that was frustrating, and that wasn't the first time we saw that in this game. And unfortunately, wasn't the last time either. We were in a situation similar to that. Not as clear-cut as that one, but very similar to that multiple times in this game, and we just bottled it. So I don't know what the deal was there. Ultimately, we won, and it came from Macias. It was a great goal, but the setup for it was very ugly, very lucky. It wasn't, you know, that wasn't something worked on the training ground. That was like the ball fell to him at the right time. He said, fuck it, I'm going to take a shot, and it worked out. And he got a full hand to it as well. The keeper did. It just still went in the net. So very lucky. And overall, I thought Macias looked really shitty in defense again. So he might be my flop, kind of like Lorenzo's was last game. So, yeah, that's – I don't know. I didn't really enjoy this game. Pioli hasn't redeemed himself in my eyes. I don't think he's getting the lineups correct. I understand Atalanta is a much bigger game. We've got a rest. But this is the first time we've had 8 days between games in – I think the entire season, because it's been so many back-to-back. Like, they're going to get the rest. I understand resting Giroud for Origi. Totally get that. But why take him off for Giroud when the whole pregame was about this is Latin's debut, he's going to come on in the last 10 minutes, and then Origi comes off at 63 minutes, which is, you know, generic Pioli. It's what he does, always on the hour mark. And he brings on Giroud, who's like, was told he was getting a rest this week. Why are you making him work again? And it's always predictable substitutions. Bringing on Bakayoko was crazy. You know, he hasn't played since May of last year. So that's wild. I don't know how close we are to that appearance obligation to buy, but I know that's why we haven't been playing and they were very close. Obviously we haven't hit it or else that would have been all over the tabloids. So, but that's worrying, especially when he said in pregame as well, that Vronx is ready to help us against Monza, specifically that exact sentence. Mm-hmm. And he didn't bring on Vronx to help us against Monza. He didn't bring on Adley, who can't buy a minute when he's had nothing but good performances when he has played. Like, why is Bakayoko coming in? And I get Bakayoko's taller. He's more defensive than those guys. Like, there's characteristics that he possesses, but we're talking about a player who hasn't played in over a year. How fresh is he looking? How good is he looking on the training pitch when he knows he's not even in the plans that he's not playing? Like, I don't know. That scares me. When we tried to offload him and had 3 or 4 deals collapse on deadline day to get rid of him. Like, it makes no sense to me. A lot of the lineup was strange. I don't know if Pioli's done enough to really redeem himself other than changing the formation, which is working, which we might change back when Mike returns. I don't know. There's a lot. Chow's the only thing he's done right, in my opinion, since January.
Yeah. that was something he kind of stumbled into as well, rather than being an inspired bit of genius. I think the Bakayoko clause is 15 more appearances, and we have 15 games left. So I just wonder if we might start to see him more now. Like, is that too big a thing to be a coincidence? Pioli said after the game that he brought him on basically because we had a lot of set pieces to defend, and we had a lot of defensive work to do, he doesn't strike me as the most secure player to put on in that situation, to be honest. I just wonder how much trust.
I didn't think he looked bad when he came on. He just shouldn't have been on.
I mean, he only had 6 minutes plus stoppage time, whatever. Yeah. But I just wonder how much Vronx is paying for that foul he gave away against Roma, you know, for the 2-2 goal. That's almost purely saying, we've got another goal advantage and we need to not do anything stupid, so I'm not putting you on. You know, you've got a bit more to do to earn my trust. But I agree. He said what he said in the press before. That's another kick in the bollocks for a young player. Playing a player that we tried so desperately to offload over a player who wants to try and prove that he's worth the investment ahead of the summer, because obviously we've got an option to buy. I did think that was strange. I do understand bringing Giroud on. I think Origi's still not 100% fit. He can probably give us 60, 65 minutes, and ended up being the case. And I think with Giroud, he wants someone, especially with only a one-goal lead, who's going to press from the front. We don't know where Ibra's at. Apparently, he's got 10, 15 minutes in his legs, so maybe that was a case of there was nobody else to bring on. I must admit, when I saw the sort of starting lineup, I saw Macias at wing-back and thought, what the is going on, as I'm sure a lot of people did. It was a bit of a strange team, and I agree with the reservations about Pioli. As I sort of mentioned at the start of the episode, like, light at the end of the tunnel still feels like a pretty hollow tunnel that could collapse at any minute with a couple of bad results, you know, lose to Atalanta and we're deep in the shit again.
Well, and it was another weird thing where the first, I want to say 65-70 minutes, they only had 3 shots on us. All 3 of them came from Macias' giveaway, by the way. So his defensive work record is awful. But after the 65th minute, I think that was all the substitutions, and I don't know how much of those substitutions actually impacted the game after that, but we were conceding shots left and right. That's when they added 7 corners in 15 minutes. I mean, they brought it to us, and it was really like we were just holding on at that point. And that's what scares me, is that we can't finish a game strong anymore. We should be able to play the way we played for the first hour of the game, for the last half hour of the game. I don't know why that's so difficult. And it seems like we're just not doing it. So I understand our depth isn't strong, and blaming it all on the substitutions is a little harsh, but they're all on the same training pitch. They all practice together, so they should be able to follow the same game plan.
Yeah. I have to echo a bit of both of what you said, but definitely on your frame of mind, Torgrud, because I thought it was really bad. Now, we won, but I think it was luck. I'm not taking anything away from the fact that we won. And again, you know, we did enough, and the change of formations obviously plugged that hole. Great. But it was bad. You know, I think we played bad football. Not even if the individual performances in some cases were also poor. I think looking at those stats that you just said, and thinking back at how we actually played, it was not good football. We've really been struggling, you know, put good combinations of play together. Messias, why?
Gotta go.
Why is he playing, you know? Salamakers is fine, you know, the guy's fine. He's healthy. He's not been eating too many chicken nuggets. Play the guy. Don't play Messias. But again, he did score. So it's like
Salamakers came off the bench and kind of looked a bit shaky himself, though, you know. So I think that shows how it's important to settle into the rhythm from minute one. But he is undoubtedly better than Messias at wing back. He can't play wing back. Like, that cannot be a thing.
Yeah, if you told me like 6 months ago that the two players I have the most faith in right now would be Salamakers and Tata Rushanu.
Tata.
That's crazy.
No.
He made like 10 saves.
Yeah, he did.
In the last 3 games, he made so many saves.
I think we've also been lucky. No, he has played fairly well, but I think we've been, the Monza game, we were lucky. We were lucky to win that game. Like, you know, not, I don't mean luck as in like we didn't deserve it, because there were, we did enough as a team, clearly, but they could have easily scored and we could have easily scored more. And it was just a toss. For me, it's flip of a coin that we won that, and that's great.
Yeah. Atalanta, it's weird how the... It's weird how the luck kind of happened there, because we were very unlucky to not score more than one goal, but we were extremely lucky not to keep the one goal lead. Well, so
For me, the Atalanta game will be the litmus test of really where this team is. For the either we stay at the three at the back or four. This next game is it. You know, then I can really be like, okay, thank you, Pioli.
Yeah, I think there's like. A thing with the obviously the terrible run of form that we went in, went to a three-man defense to try and secure a bit more cover, and I think we have looked more cohesive. We've definitely been more defensively organized and disciplined. We've got 3-1-0 wins. We've not played brilliant football throughout those three wins, but is it that we've got a platform now, having had it decimated before? We've now got something where we can build on. Okay, let's win the next one 2-0, and then let's win. I don't know if that's how it's going to work, but the stat is quite scary in that those last three games we've had less possession than the opponents, which suggests that we're not winning comfortably and we don't actually really know how to control games fully with this new system. It's the first time since under Montella that we've had three games in a row with less possession than the opponent. So there needs to be something that comes from this, because we cannot keep getting results this way. You know, eventually we will drop points playing this way. But I suppose that's three games in a week and it's three wins, and it's something that none of us saw coming. So we take that, we bank it. But this is how Pioli now proves to us all that he's turned it around. The next performances have to get better and better. Otherwise, the same fears will remain.
One thing about these three games, though, that we haven't had Benacer these three games. He's our best player.
He's our most important player.
Yeah.
Yeah, he is our most important. I agree. Yep.
I think put him in this system, and I bet we do have more possession than whoever we play once he's there, be it Atalanta or I don't know, whoever comes next, you know. I'm curious though. I think we should stick with this system more so than going back to back four, even when Mike returns.
I actually agree. The only thing is, I don't know if it's not sustainable from a next season point of view, because these sort of formations, you have to have certain players for it. And I think we don't have the characteristics of the players, you know, sort of workhorses. You know, if we had Kessie, for example, I'd be a bit more confident. Maybe this actual three at the back could be something next season, but I think it's very much for let's just get to the summer, get top four, maybe at best, because we just don't have the personnel for it. We are a possession-based side. That's where we excel. We've the best football. The characteristics of our players are like that. But yeah, I agree. At the moment, it's clear that it's more solid, and ultimately, we just need to get wins. So no matter how we do that.
Yeah, top performer for me. I didn't pick him in the last game, so I'm going to take the chance to do it now. Malik Thiaw, just fantastic, resplendent. I can't remember what I tweeted exactly, but he's a graceful but athletic unit. You know what I mean? Like he's huge, and I would hate to go up for a header against him. But at the same time, he can make it look so effortless. He almost seems to glide across the pitch and soar in the air.
He's composed for 21.
It's incredible, really. It is incredible. And we shouldn't be surprised to see him be a leader and to be up to the big occasion, because he's Germany's under-21 captain, which is quite a prestigious thing. And I'm just chuffed to see him doing so well. 5 million euros we paid for him, 2 million bonuses. But it feels like he's been given his chance and he's taken it with both hands. So buzzing for him.
Yeah. I'm not going to add anything to that. Just completely exactly what you said. Muy chao.
Yeah, I also have to. I think it was going to be a full house because I don't think any other player played well in the Monza game. To be honest with you, I thought they were all below. They were all five, if not less, with Messias somehow being a two and scoring, as I'm sure Torgrue will touch on in a bit. So I would agree with that sentiment completely. Yeah, Chao, flawless again, brilliant player.
Flop, easy for me. Origi, piss off, crap. Useless. What's the point? Like, you get a chance and you do nothing to suggest that you should have another. I know he's had an injury layoff and I know he's going to need a little bit of actual game time to kind of get up to speed, especially now we've switched formations. But my God, at least use your athleticism. At least use what you've got going for you to try and do something. Like, it just is not clicking, man. It's not clicking.
Yeah, he's definitely the striker profile that should work in this system as well. That's the scary thing, and he's non-existent. I mean, I cannot think of one thing he did the entire game, not one. Like, other than getting subbed off early, you know, that's the only thing I can think of. So, he's definitely a good choice, but I am going to go with the goal scorer Messias. He just looks so shitty in defense, and as a wingback, like, defense is really important. When every shot, when every chance that they create is coming from your side, whether it's directly your fault or indirectly your fault, like, that's where you need to be covering, and he wasn't. And it was causing Kalulu to have to work overtime, who actually did pretty decent, but again, he was all over the place because he had to cover for all of the holes Messias was leaving. It's the same issue I have with Calabria. And it's an issue I don't have with Salamakers in that position. Salamakers is always there defensively. There's one thing you see Salamakers do when they're making the opposition's making a pass. He runs from behind and he cuts those off. He intercepts it and then makes his run with the winger mentality. And we saw Messias try to do it, and he did cut the ball off, but he tripped over the ball, and then they got the ball back, and then Kalulu had to recover it for us. So it's like, he knows what needs to be done. He's just not good enough. And that's the part that worries me. So he's my fault.
The role for Messias has got to be the right side, you know, behind the center forward in the attack somewhere. You cannot have him exposed out there as the wingback, because we actually have a player who is probably a prototype wingback in Dest. Like,
yeah,
you know, he would do a better job at wingback. I'm almost convinced. But yeah, I feel like Messias was thrown under the bus a little bit there as well.
Yeah, he was. Remember his very first game with us last season when he came on, missed a shot, and then gave away a penalty. And oh, now, God, we're trying to play him in defense, and I'm like,
Atalanta next week, eh? Bring it on.
My entire podcast spiel that game was, why do we have a defender, a winger tracking back in defense? He shouldn't be there, and now we're playing him in defense, and I'm just like, yeah, it's blowing my mind. So
here we are. Lorenzo.
Yeah, and mine will also be Origi. I think me bad. More because I thought this would be the perfect, like you guys, the perfect opportunity for him to contribute something, or at least put a good performance, if not a goal and assist. You know, put his body about, put his athleticism, as you guys said, run at defenders, cause him trouble, but he did nothing. He did literally nothing. He was so forgettable. He gave the ball away. He can't hold it up. It's just a shame because he's clearly got the ability. You know, the two goals he scored for us have been bangers, like, they're unbelievable goals. He's clearly got the characteristics, but for some reason he can't put whatever he's got in his brain on his feet together at the right moment in a football match. And yeah, it's kind of worrying. The only benefit or sort of positive thing I suppose we can look at is the fact that he's 27. We're going to have him for what? Two more years at least. You'd like to think
that makes
one
me
season.
Want to cry.
Yeah, I know, but you think
4 million a year.
Yeah, no, it's a lot, but you got to think. Look, he didn't do. Do you know? I was speaking to a Liverpool, my mate, one of my closest mates is a Liverpool fan, and he was saying, you know, we're talking about Origi, and really, if you look back at what he did at Liverpool, he wasn't great. He just did that same thing in really big moments. Mm. So perhaps there's an element of that's what he's always been. That is kind of it, you know, and hopefully he might do it for us in a final or a league winning game in a year or even a Champions League knockout game. Who knows? But it's clear that he's never going to be a 15 goal striker, season striker. It's just not going to happen, which is a shame.
Yeah. So we have a big game coming up on Sunday at San Siro against Atalanta. Atalanta coming into this one off the back of a pretty difficult result. They lost 2-1 at home to Lecce, which has put a spoke in their wheels for the time being. Must say I had a fivefold Serie A bet on Sunday that required Luckman to score. Everything else came in, would have been 660 quid. He was a yard offside.
How much?
Off, it was like a tenner. But it wasn't that mental. It was Luckman to score, and obviously he's on great form. It was an Empoli centre back, Ismail something to be booked in the derby, obviously against Fiorentina. Immobile to score, Juve to win, Roma to win. So everything else came in, and Luckman was a yard offside in that game, and that's what ended up costing me. But here we are. Atalanta flew out the traps. They won 8 out of the first 10 games and got themselves established in the top four, and everyone was even talking about them as being along with the sort of jostling for second place. Then they had a really bad run in the build-up to the break for the World Cup. We lost 4 out of 5 in that. And as mentioned, they've had a little bit of a wobble recently even. They lost 1-0 away at Sassuolo. Then they went and won 2-0 at Lazio. Then they lost at home to Lecce. So basically, they're a bit all over the place and unpredictable, as they've always been. They've still got plenty of threat. It'd be fair to say that Luckman, despite my general distaste of what happened over the weekend, is having a great season. Rasmus Højlund is the new big thing. Coop Miners has proven to be a good signing. Gasperini, coach, knows the league well, knows Milan well. How do we feel coming into this game? Bit of a battle for the top four.
Yeah, everything you just said. And yet we haven't lost to them in our last four. You know, we drew 1-1 in August, but then we won three prior to that with two clean sheets in it. So two goals, three goals, two goals. So, I mean, we've been putting numbers past them, and they're not in great form. So I'm cautiously optimistic because of our form as well. I do think they play a type of football that might give us a lot of trouble, but I think we win. I think we do. I think we beat them, and I'm going to go 2-0. I think this is going to be a good one for us.
I'm just looking at their injury situation quickly. Demiral is going to miss this game because he's picked up too many yellow cards, which is centre-back gone. Duvan Zapata is going to miss this game. He's picked up an injury. Mario Pasalic is also not expected, or he's touch and go by the looks of things, and Hatabur is out longer term. So those are some big players that we'll be missing for this game, we presume. And we might have Benacer and Maignan back. Sky are reporting that they are going to be back. Gazzetta, who I don't see as being as reliable, are saying that that it won't be. It'll be more likely Fiorentina game afterwards. But that would be massive to get pretty much our first choice 11 on the pitch. You know, that's what it would be.
I don't think we're going to have Mike back. I know.
I don't.
Yeah. I mean, in the based on no information I have that others don't, it's just I'll believe it when I see it, you know?
Yeah.
It's just 5 months out. Yeah. I think it all depends on if he's back in training tomorrow. Mm-hmm. The team have got a day off today, so we don't know if he's back. But if he's training with the squad tomorrow, that gives him sort of a 5-day run up at it. And then maybe, but you don't risk him when Tata's having a good moment either. This might be the time when you can. But again, the Fiorentina game isn't like a long, long time after either. So I don't know if he's good to go. He might want to have that first start back at San Siro in front of the home fans and with the defense doing well, and you know, try make things a bit easier for him. But yeah, Lorenzo.
Yeah, I think this game is eggshells, is what I would say. I think we can win, but I wouldn't say I'm optimistic. I'm more just cautious is how I feel about it. It's definitely the game that if we win, will catapult us. I mean, when I say catapult, I mean solidify our form being back in some description. But on the flip side, if we lose this game, I don't care how we lose it, if we just flat out lose this game, I think it will be really damaging, like incredibly damaging. Just because Fiorentina, I'm not so worried about, but again, the game's going to come fairly quick. And then obviously it Spurs after that, right? So, which is huge. And I think, we just need to build momentum. But with all those things you guys said, especially thinking about the absences from Atalanta's side, I think we can win it. I just don't know, because I haven't seen enough. You know, we've won and we've got three wins. That's great. But because the performances, except for the Spurs game, but I think we played up to that, and also Spurs didn't turn up particularly, haven't been so convincing. I just don't know. I think we can win, but I honestly just don't know. And that's because of where the team is. And Atalanta have always given us trouble in some ways, whether it's getting an injury because of them or just because they're tough to play against. So, yeah.
I feel like this is a must win.
Not at all. I agree. But I don't know if we need to put the pressure. It's such a tentative, like, I think we need to go with the calm mindset, you know. I hope not be like that. But at the same time, effectively it is, because I think if we lose it, we're going to regress. Really,
yeah, big. If we looking at the table, I mean, we're only in fourth right now, and Atalanta's three points behind us. If they win this, they have the head-to-head over us, go equal points, they jump us, we're in Europa League.
It's bad. But it's if we win,
we put a six-point gap between us and Europa League, right, and nice. The head-to-head. It's basically a seven-point gap. I mean, this late in the season, three games is a big swing, so I don't know. I think it's pretty important to get a win here, not a draw. It has to be a win.
You win, I agree with that.
And if we pass this test, we've got a Fiorentina side who are dive bombing basically at the moment after.
Yeah.
And then we've got Salernitana at home. Then we've got Udinese away. So you start looking at Udinese kind of dropped off after a brilliant start. You start looking at being able to build a bit of momentum before that Napoli away game in early April. And obviously we've got the Spurs game in amongst that as well. I'm going to say 1-0. Why not stick with it? It seems to be working for us, so I'll have another 1-0. That'd be nice.
I think we're conceding. I think we're conceding this game. I just, I've got no idea. I can't predict. I actually have no clue. I really don't know. I'm going to predict a win, but I just don't know the score. I've got no idea.
Do we think Zlatan debuts?
Yeah. Oh, really? He needs to play.
Depends on the situation of the game. Like, it can't be fucking pageantry. It can't be ceremonial, you know, like... Mm. We have a job to do ultimately, and we can't just parade him out like he's some kind of mascot. Depends on the game. If we're 3-0 up, chuck him on for 5 minutes. Or if we need a bit of a charge, we know that he likes beefing with Atalanta. He's done it in the past. So why not, man? But I wouldn't pre-plan it. If it happens, the moment's right, then do it. A couple of talking points before we do a couple of questions. I'm looking at the time, don't worry. We keep being linked with, because we were talking about the centre forward situation. Origi not up to it. Giroud will be 37 this year. Ibra is probably going to be retired. We've been linked with a number of different centre forwards. I'm going to throw four of them at you, and you can tell me who you prefer and why. First one is Marcus Thuram. Would be available on a free from Borussia Mönchengladbach. Sounds like Premier League teams want him. Would be able to offer more wages. Second one, Fuller in Balogun, who's on loan at Stade Reims from Arsenal. Obviously, Arsenal have a couple of strikers already, so they might look to cash in. He's got 15 goals this year, I want to say. With Reims,
is he still top of Ligue 1's goal?
Yeah, I think he might be, yeah. 15 goals in a mid-table team as well. He's doing pretty damn well. Third one is Rasmus Højlund, who is at Atalanta. Sounds like he's been very impressive this season, there's no doubt, but he's 19, so there might be some more question marks about whether he's ready for the big investment and the big step up. And the fourth one has completely vanished out of my head. So go with those three for now. I'll see if I can remember the fourth one.
Of those three, I lean towards Balogun. I think he's 21, as you said, so Højlund is fantastic. But he wasn't at the start of this season. He's just kind of slowly growing into it and becoming something great. And again, he's 19. He's in a system that favors young players. We're seeing Pioli not give young players a chance. I don't know if we're the right fit for him right now. So I lean more towards Balogun. Marcus Thuram, I think he's just going to go to the Premier League. I think that's kind of what's to be expected. But that is also my issue with Balogun, is he's technically Arsenal loaned. So what if they just want to keep him? You know,
they've got Nketiah and Gabriel Jesus, but they might think and swap him out for Nketiah. And there was actually two other names which I'll throw out there now. One of them's Jonathan David of Lille, always linked. I've kind of gone cold on that. But then
if he has the same amount of goals as Balogun. I got it up right now. Him, Mbappe, and Balogun.
If we keep going with two up front and he can be supported and have players around him, then oh, that'd be amazing. But he is not a lone centre forward, so we need to figure out the system thing first. And then the other one is another teenager called El Yewahi from Montpellier, which could be a made-up name, but he's actually doing quite well, I think.
I mean,
he's got equals.
For teenager, yeah.
My 5 cents is that I don't think any of those players will come, to be honest. But the ones I want to talk about, I think Balogun would be... I think would be the best fit. I just don't see in what world he comes to Milan, not because we can't give him the football. I just don't see it with Arsenal probably wanting options. They do tend to keep players as well. You know, Saliba went on loan and he came back. I think a similar thing will happen with Balogun. David would be the one that I think we actually have a chance. Not just because he single-handedly won me a FIFA tournament with my mates. Shout out FIFA 21, Jonathan David. But talking real life football, I agree with you though, Ollie. I think he would have to be supported well enough, or at least in a, you know, whether you have a sort of like number 10, number 11 type striker, centre forward, and then a proper number 9 with him. However it would shape up, I think Jonathan David has some good characteristics and we've been linked with him a few times. He's done it over the most number of years now, is correct, out of those players, I would say.
Yeah, he fired them to a title, essentially.
Yeah, he's done it. He's the most,
ready.
Ready, like compounded his skills. That's what's
actually good. Maybe Thuram has a shout of being that, but I don't think we're going to get him.
But Thuram's a bit older, isn't he, I think. So, 25, I think David's youngest and the most compounded in terms of his skills in a league, which, okay, fine, but we've had a lot of success buying players in the French league, so I don't really see that as a slight. So for me, David, out of those, yeah.
Yeah, I think I'd go Thuram number one, but it's unrealistic. But if I had to pick an out-and-out first choice, it would be him. He's an absolute unit. Scores plenty of goals. Would be available on a free, so maybe you can justify the wages that might be needed. But I don't think we can compete against the other teams that will be looking for him. Then I'd probably have Balogun in there second. I'd love to see a movement-based striker come in rather than someone that we just lump ours up to. But how do we wean ourselves off what we have with Giroud at the moment? Because we do play very direct to him, and I think
that's why I think Balogun would be good. Because Balogun already plays in a 4-2-3-1. So if we're going back to that anyways,
good knowledge.
He's going to fit right back in. Looking at Jonathan David's stats right now, though, his last 4 seasons, his worst goal-scoring season was 13. Then he had 18, 15, and right now he's on 15 already with he's 15 less games.
We have good relations with Lille as well.
Yeah,
so that could
be we love a Lille. And
Lille, they got rid of Lille, which is good with me. But yeah, that's
and you know what, Lille lined up in a 4-2-3-1 last game as well.
Yeah, so there you go. It's the safest bet. I think we can get him for a good price. I think we could get a good deal with Lille, and I think he would hit the ground running. Now, I'm not saying he's the best player. I think Balogun would probably be the most high ceiling player of what we could get. But I think David is actually realistic.
Hoyland, by the way, only joined Atalanta for like 17 million last summer. So I think they're going to want triple their money.
No. And I don't want to do business with Atalanta. I don't want to do business with them. They'll extort us. I'm not interested. Yeah.
I just pulled up the lineup from Lille. They're playing Timothy Weah as a left back. He's the U.S. striker. He's a striker for the U.S.
Jonathan Bamba was really good in that game. As well, you know. I mean, what a game. Lille scored a 90th minute winner in the 69th minute, which was very impressive. And then PSG went on and scored 2 more goals. But yeah, that was a fun game to watch. Let's do a couple of questions then, and then we can wrap up. We got a couple of questions about Calabria, which I'll combine into one, basically. Michael Gambino asks about Calabria's injury and if it was lingering and affected his last few performances. And then we also got asked about the idea of Calabria coming back into the lineup when he's fit, potentially even playing as a right-sided centre-back. wouldn't do that. You know, that's Kalulu's rule.
I thought I had the flu. Turns out it was just knowing that question was coming up.
Yeah.
The idea of Calabria as a no thanks.
My not God, isn't Calabria like 5'6" or 5'7" or something? I don't even want to know.
I bet he's
like 5'11". Yeah. Yeah. I think he's 5'10", 5'11". That's just because our back line's all 6'4".
5'10". He's 5'10". Yeah. He's just, he struggles on the physical side of defensive one. Aerial duels, yes, but even just defensive duels in general.
Yeah, he's tenacious, but he's not strong. That's Calabria. He's tenacious, but he's not a strong guy.
I don't think he has a role in a three-man defense because he's not a centre back and he's not a wing back. But no. I don't know. Maybe his role becomes as someone that you bring on for Salamakers and you turn it into a back five. Or something, but I don't know. I don't feel like there's an obvious position for him at the moment. But yes, I do think his injury was causing him problems. AJ was the first to mention it on the pod, saying that he still looks unfit. And I think now we're looking at 10 to 15 days out, according to Sky. And I think that goes to show that he never really got back to 100%. And I hope that's the case because his form wasn't good. But yeah. if he wasn't, he's got an excuse if he was injured because he was getting spun left, right, and centre. But if he comes back at 100% and he can contribute in the last part of the season, then happy days.
Yeah, he's still great.
Hossam Diwan asked, and I know you two might not watch much of the Primavera. I know AJ actually hates it, if anything.
Yeah.
in your opinion, which performing youth player should be the next to get called up to the squad?
Oh, Chaka Traore.
Yeah.
So there's a list. There's Younes El Hilali, who scored yesterday, Cheka Traore, Andre Kubis, Gabriele Alessi, Darius Stalmach, and Victor Eletu.
I liked Eletu from preseason. He'd get my vote from what I've seen of him.
he's tenacious. He could be a future Kessie type, you know. He really, really gets stuck in, but he's a bit more box-to-box than shielding the defence. I agree with AJ. Cheka Traore is by far the closest. We signed him after he made his Serie A debut against us, age 16, and that shows how ready they thought he was. But we got to handle him carefully, and when he does get promoted full-time to the senior team, hopefully Liao's still around, because I think he could learn a lot from him. Yeah. About how to use his assets better, because he still doesn't do it great. The Primavera are pretty shit still. Like they won their youth league group, which was a real shock, considering the teams that we were up against. Salzburg, Chelsea have gone far in the competition last year. But then in the league, we're in the relegation playoff places. But so are like Inter, Atalanta, Napoli are all down there as well, which makes it even stranger how the Primavera League works. Mm-hmm. But the development of individuals seems to be really promising. Like El Hilali scored some huge games this season. Traore seems to be involved in a goal every single game. Kubis is a unit. He's physically the most ready. He's huge. He's like 6'3", built like a brick shithouse. He could probably step up to the physical demands of top-level football straight away, whereas Traore might find it tough. Stalmach is one for the future. We signed him from Poland, and he was very highly rated. He got a goal and an assist in the game yesterday, and he's only like 17, and he's been sort of drip-fed into the... But these players are all, in my opinion, 2 or 3 years away. You know, we've got to be very careful how we handle them, because we've rushed players up before and they've ended up really becoming nothing. So I do think we have a talented group. We think we need to get them used to winning domestically. But the youth league progress was good. And I think Abate's learning the trade as well as a coach. You know, it's his first season in charge of a pretty competitive level. You know, it is still competitive. Out of those, it's probably Traore or Kubis. That'll do. We got a lot of questions about the three-man system and switching back to the 4-2-3-1, which we kind of addressed in the episode, and questions about next coach, which we've spoken about before. Thank you very much to everyone. If you managed to stick through until the end, it was really nice to be able to talk about some wins. It's been a while since I've been able to do that. We hope to have another one to talk about next week in the massive game against Atalanta. In the meantime, drop us a like, comment, subscribe on YouTube if you haven't already. Give us a rating on your favourite podcast platform. That would be brilliant. Let us know which of those strikers you choose as well. Let us know any ideas you have about how we can get Calabria back into the team. And yeah, I've been your host, Ollie Fish. You can find me on Twitter at Ollie Fisher. AJ, thanks for joining.
Yep, Tori45 and cool.
Lorenzo.
Yeah, thanks. Always a pleasure joining these boys. Really nice to talk about some wins, and yeah, hope to see you guys in the next few weeks coming up. Thanks.
Thank you very much for watching, everyone. We'll catch you in a week.
Ante, ecco l'anteante in area di rigore, anteante, anteante, Ibra, gol! Vediamo se è buono, ce lo da buono, ce lo da buono, ce lo...